This podcast does contain spoilers, so if you're okay with that, listen on. If not, pause the podcast, go watch the movie we're about to talk about, and come on back.
All right, sweet.
Excuse me.
Brian, over here. Hey.
Pardon me.
Why don't you have the popcorn? It's starting!
Woo!
Hey!
Shut up and listen to the podcast. Hey!
There's a lot out there to see. This is what we watched.
Hey, but it was slightly colder today. It was under 100 degrees.
Under 100. That's what we're shooting for now.
Hey, that's what I'm shooting for the last week or so. I'm shooting for under 100 degrees. You know what I'm shooting for the podcast?
What's
good
that?
Good movies.
Oh, yay, good
what
movies.
What we watched. Okay, we're going to
What we watched.
We're just going to power through that shitty intro. I don't really care.
That cold open. It's fine. It's good. We're back. That's what matters.
We are back.
It's just me and Matt today. Just Matt and I. Just me and myself and Mateo.
And Matt.
The God. Way we like it. The original band
Hell,
of brother.
Oh, yes. Oh, gee. We are the single band. It was one band. It was a skinny band. It was fine.
Small, band. Short band.
The good people.
But we are doing our podcast, and you know what that podcast is called? It's called What We Watched. What We Watched is?
I do
it's
ask
a movie me. Review podcast.
I was going to
It's also a movie. It's also a podcast for TV lovers, and it's a podcast for those who like singing along to their favorite songs.
I should have never.
And of course.
Go ahead.
You should have never mentioned it.
I
and
should
of course,
never
mentioned all of America's favorite song, collectively, is obviously the national anthem.
Brother, that chick was awful. What's even her name? Yeah. It's like Ingrid something. She's now in rehab. I'm sure
yeah,
I could just type in Ingrid and figure it out. Andres.
It absolutely. Yeah, we'll be at the top of the results. So we're recording in a vacuum today. When we're recording is the day of the All-Star Game. So we had the privilege of watching and listening to the greatest rendition of the national anthem before the home run derby yesterday.
My God. Do you think she was actually drunk? For the people, yeah, it was Ingrid Andres, who's like a legit country singer. She's been nominated 4 times for a Grammy. Like,
yeah,
I listened to like one music video for like 30 seconds. And I'm like, you know what? She can kind of actually sing a little bit. So do you think she was actually drunk or do you think it's all bullshit?
I think it's all bullshit. I don't think she was that drunk. I don't know what it was. I don't know if she was on something. I don't want to think that either. I think that she just
got
really like paranoid and really afraid of the moment.
I don't know. I disagree with that. I mean, that's insane to me for a country singer who tours and like has a concert to be like, oh, I'm nervous singing the national anthem. That would be crazy to me. Some of us are talking was like, I wonder if they just didn't give her or they fucked up most of the time people will send back a feed of themselves sometimes to the people so they can hear and they can stay on pitch and they can control themselves. Some people can just do it like internally. Some people are very impressive. So maybe she was like, hey, I don't need them. And everyone went, wow, you don't understand singing in a stadium because it's really hard. It's like so echoey and it's so like open that it's really hard to just judge it off yourself. So I wonder if that or maybe she did ask for it and they fucked it up. But I feel like she would have said something about that. She would have been like, she would have bashed the audio people, I'm sure, because God, everyone starts bashing the audio people right off the bat.
Right. Blame somebody else, not blame. Don't take accountability. Like I said, if she's just, you know, didn't have any assist, any kind of auto tune, any kind of like, you know, help on the back end. And just doesn't always hit the notes that she's supposed to.
I mean, that was farther than, oh, okay, she's a mediocre. Like, yeah, sure. There are definitely pop singers that, like, will sing on their own, acoustic or whatever. And it's like, okay, she's not that good. We understand, sure. Blah, blah, blah. But that is, that's a whole nother level. That's like, God, it was embarrassing. Can you imagine waking up the next morning? Or do you think it happened? Do you think she it started immediately because I didn't see it until I want to say like that night, like after the home run derby happened and everything.
Uh-huh.
Which who won the home run derby? Just so we can establish something better about this. Not it's just about how awful she was.
That was the Los Angeles Dodgers.
You watched it, forgetting
his name.
You watched.
I know I did. I know I did.
He watched it last night.
It was Teoscar Hernandez. That's
of course,
it was.
Obviously.
It was a Los Angeles Dodgers star, Teoscar Hernandez, who was making his first major league home run derby, and he was, I think, what was the stat? The fourth?
I didn't watch it.
First time derby contestant to win it. So that was cool.
Nice, nice, nice. Magical.
But yeah, that was a good show. That was, it was after the horrendous rendition, that was a, it was a fun time. I had the privilege a few years back when it was at Coors Field to get to watch the Home Run Derby live. And it like is shockingly an entertaining like thing to be at and to, you know, take part of. I have always loved the All-Star game and I've always loved the festivities. I would love to see like a skills competition, like something like the like hockey does, or even that football is implementing in the Pro Bowls, like some kind of skills competition during the All-Star break.
Okay. Pitch a couple. What do you want to see?
Furthest throw or most accurate throw from, you know, third base or from second base or stuff like that. Let's see if you can hit it to a certain target. Let's see how accurate you can be, you know, trying to hit it. Or if you're not a switch hitter, how far can you hit it from the other side of the batter's box? That would be fucking amazing and hilarious to watch.
I don't believe if they put a skills competition, I still would not watch.
That's fine. It's for me.
Oh, just for you. Brandon Elliott skills competition this year. Someone's going to win the Brandon. Gonna have a little statue of you. That'd be sweet. I'd be down with that. I might watch it if it's that. If it's labeled like that, I think I'd be down for that.
That would be so cool. Anyway, yeah, so we're gonna try and do better than Ingrid did last night. We're off to a great start.
No, I'm cutting that awkward pause. I don't know what you're talking about.
What awkward pause? I don't know what you're talking about.
Gangster.
No, we're today on the podcast, Matt and I we're just doing audio because Google hates me, so I can't do the Zoom recording or the Google Meets recording. See, I'm telling you, I'm gonna butcher it now intentionally.
That's definitely Google's fault that you didn't pay more to have the higher level. Google went,
yes.
You know what? Fuck Brandon.
Yeah. Fuck you.
Fuck.
Thanks a
that?
Lot, man.
Who
Thanks
is this guy?
Lot.
Is he the skills competition guy? Fuck that guy.
He wants a skills competition, but he won't pay for it. He won't bankroll it. So no, it's not happening.
And baseball doesn't have a skills competition because they hate you.
Because they hate me. Exactly. See? It all makes sense.
Oh, definitely. Makes
so
sense.
Today on the show, Matt and I are going to be talking about the new Yorgos Lanthimos movie. I was going to say, you know, a series of short films, but
hell yeah,
movie called Kinds of Kindness. Currently out in theaters now. An interesting take. Can't wait to get into that. But before we do that, Matt, you were telling me you got to see another movie while you've been down in Grand Junction. What'd you go see?
So I did. I also saw, because I know you've already seen The Bike Riders. So I was able to see The Bike Riders because I'm out here in Grand Junction and this is movie like desert, homie. There are two movie theaters here. There's a Regal and then there is The Picture Show, which definitely one of the best names for a movie theater. Like that. Granted, it doesn't have stadium seating.
What?
So it's not that good. But even the
what
Regal,
does it have fold, just fold out chairs?
No, it's just everyone's. No, it's a little angled. It was like slightly angled. Last time I was here, I saw The Fall Guy. And yeah, it was thankfully no one else was there because it was just like short. God, and then the Regal is not very big either. I was gonna see Horizon because Jeff is a liar and said good things about it, which. I figured this was going to happen anyways. I figured it'd be like visually nice, but like the story would be annoying and it'd be long and shit like that. So, but I want to wait until it's like at least a bigger screen, better screen than the garbage that's here. No offense, Grand Junction or The Picture Show. So I saw Bike Riders. It was very interesting. I have seen two movies while I'm out here. Both movies, Kinds of Kindness being the other one. Both movies, a couple walked out on.
Really?
Both movies. Bike Riders, two people, they left around maybe the abort. I forgot when they left during The Bike Riders. The freaking Kinds of Kindness people, they left early, dude. They left before the first fake ending. Really? Which was astonishing. I was very shocked by it.
That's irritating. Was it the same couple?
I don't think so. Well, the second dude, the only reason I know the difference is in the second one in Kinds of Kindness, the guy was really big, like a big buff dude. And that's the only reason I noticed. He was definitely not the same as the other one, which was a normal looking human being.
How strange. Even with films like I don't like, if I have paid or if I have submitted one of my free tickets, like I'll sit through it. I don't know. I there's something in me that's like, I'm going to get my money's worth, or I'm going to endure this torture. Even if it's not my cup of tea, even if I don't like it, or it's not grabbing me the way that I thought it would. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't.
It's got to be a lot for me to leave. A lot. Mm-hmm. And I could not tell you. I don't know if there's any movie I have walked out on that I can remember. The closest would have been like Madame Web, but that was just hilarious. That was just a great comedy, I thought. They did a really good like satire take on Marvel and superheroes and stuff, and just to show you how dumb it really is. So they were really high level intellect. I saw the Bike Riders. I thought it was middle of the road. Mediocre. My big issue with it is that I didn't like the way they decided to tell the story. Like interviewing her and kind of doing it like in, you know, linearly, kind of like in a row, but like not exactly. And we kind of gotten it broken up a little bit here and there. I did not like that. I would have loved if you've just given me a motorcycle Almost Famous. Sweet, here's my money. I'll watch it again. I would have loved that. Of them, like, actually, like, starting and, I like the emotional stuff. Like, I figured going in, I thought it was going to be more about, you know, what it is to be part of the biker gang, and it's a family, mm-hmm. and it's like, you know, mm-hmm. we're here for each other, but we're also bad people, blah, 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 stuff like that. I figured that, which I liked. I was okay with, but it's just the way they decided to tell it and lay it out. I was not digging it, and, I think it really prevented me from, you know, I'll be echoing this future when we talk about the next movie, but it was hard for me to truly sink into the movie when we got interrupted by, the chick and the ex tennis player. When we got interrupted by them, it was a little annoying to me, but that sound was good. Those motorcycles were fucking gangster.
Yes. Sound was good. The costumes were really cool also. At least for the Bike Riders, it was really slow. I also didn't care for the way it was told, but I think that just more caught me off guard than me just going, oh, I just absolutely hate this form of storytelling. It just felt like, I don't know, we were looking in from the outside, but then also like interacting with characters and you know, situations where the main character who is telling the story wouldn't have been privy to that information. So it's either just speculation or right. Like, you know, to play up on that would have been interesting to go, hey, you weren't actually there. How do you know this is what they said? How do you know? How do you know this is what happened? Or are we just going to piecemeal this together? Or hey, I've only got bits and pieces of this, so I've had to, you know, create my own story around this.
And then sometimes
that I think would have been a little more interesting.
Yeah. Sometimes it wasn't even her telling the story. Like they like blended into, and then the guy was like, the interviewer was also there at some point too. And I was like, I don't know what is happening. I don't understand like what this is truly happening. And the thought that they were going to let that reporter wear a jacket. That's insane to me. That's insane. To me. Like,
yeah.
I thought they treasured. I mean, they do treasure that shit, like for the rest of it. But they just let that slide, and that was so weird to me. Felt out of place.
Right. It felt definitely disjointed. And not so much lackluster, but it wasn't as, I don't know, it wasn't as enthralling as I was hoping it to be. Plus, you know, again, and this is why I personally try to stay away from trailers. As you know, the first couple teaser trailers for this movie made it feel like a lot more intense, a lot more gripping, a lot more dirty and gritty than it really was. So I try to, you know, go in with different expectations from what I see. But again, when it kind of promotes a different style of movie, then I'm just, thrown into a whirlwind of, oh, I've got to reset my expectations after I've already started this movie.
Can't do that. God.
No, God, no, absolutely not.
I decided what I'm going to eat next week, and God, I cannot change that. Okay.
Yeah.
What do you think about the, I thought it was still, you know, down and gritty. I thought it was still gritty and shit, but I understand. I guess I don't know. It's interesting because you said, because you saw it before me and you were like, oh, this isn't what I was expecting. I then said, I think it's like this. And it was kind of what I thought it was going to be. Like,
Yes.
So it's interesting that you and I interpreted the trailer differently.
Mm-hmm.
So is it really necessarily like, what are they supposed to do if like other people did interpret it correctly?
That's true. Yeah. If it was just me seeing something and projecting like, oh, this wouldn't this be cool to see? That's very true. Maybe they did. And I haven't seen the trailer in a minute. Maybe they did market it exactly how it was.
Late Monday, like a late Monday. what'd you think about the acting? I did think the acting was pretty good. I believe I have a story about some teenage girls that were watching the movie. And I think there was one reason why they were there. Austin Butler's pretty hot. I'm not going to lie.
Because Austin Butler, yeah. Very, very, very rugged, I would say, for sure.
I know.
I think Austin Butler is starting to lose the Elvis accent, not as much as quickly as I wanted, as I think he, you know, as most actors usually do, but I think he's getting there. Besides that, I thought it was actually really good. I love Tom Hardy. The wife, she sunk into her character, I thought, pretty
thoroughly. That fucking voice got so annoying. Oh my God. Yeah. I was like, I'm over this. Can we stop this? Can she just like be from a normal city at some point, please?
Yeah. But overall, I mean, I think each character was pretty unique and pretty distinct from one another. I don't think anyone did a particularly bad job. I don't think it was necessarily outstanding work. But it definitely wasn't, you know, to me, it wasn't, I was going to say Miss Marvel, and that's not the right thing. Madam Web. Well, it wasn't Madam Web level.
Oh God. I didn't think it was even close to that. It feels very like middle of the road to me. Like I watch it and I go, you could have gone a different direction and I would have absolutely loved it probably more, but I don't hate this. Like I was never watching it going, you know, oh, this is awful personally. You know, I'm not going to grade it, but it would be in like the mid sevens, probably, you know, somewhere around there. Just because it's
I would say either high sixes or low sevens for me.
Yeah. I'm not putting in, by no means am I putting it in the conversation in the eights, which would be like, oh, hey, I think this might be one of the better movies of the year. And then, you know, I guess maybe it could be six if I looked at it more critically and I actually put down some notes. I don't know. I really like Austin Butler. I was watching this going, honest to God, it's so funny that you brought up the Elvis thing. Because I go, God, I feel so bad. I wonder if people would respect him more if the Elvis thing never happened. Because he's such a good actor, I feel like.
Yeah.
You know, not all of his roles necessarily are fantastic. And the movies that he's inside of aren't always fantastic. But I don't think I rarely think it's his fault. I can't think of a movie that I'm like, I don't like it because of him. He's one of the reasons why I don't like it.
Right. So. Right. Yeah, no, he's stellar. He's a lot of fun to watch. He's very versatile. If Elvis never happened, I really wonder if he'd be anywhere near the level of star that he is. And I don't think so. And I don't know the amount of crap that he would get for the roles. I think that it would be a lot less.
I think he definitely would not be, I don't think he'd be as big of a star, but I think they kind of like wanted to make him a star. He was one in that like Glenn Powell kind of realm where it's like, we're going to put him in everything. So I agree with you that I'm sure he wouldn't be as big of a star, but I bet you he'd be more like, you know, the voice is like the most that people talk about him. I think at this point, it feels like,
I think you're right.
So it's like, he'd be a little bit more respect because literally you brought it up, you know, and I didn't even prompt you in any way, shape or form. But like, I think he'd be a little bit more, you know, well respected with a lack of a better term where it's like, I think he's still respected, but I think he would be seen as like a much better actor that just hasn't found like breakout movies yet rather than, oh, he still kind of sounds like Elvis, you know, rather than that. Like, that's what the takeaway from his stuff is.
Very different connotation, very different association, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. So we'll roll into the main event, Kinds of Kindness, KOK. I've been spelling it KOK.
KOK.
I've been just writing KOK everywhere.
when you write KOK, do you do all uppercase or do you lowercase the O?
Because
that's what I do. Upper, lower, upper. I'm guessing you do all uppers.
What are you talking about? We just had this JoJo conversation.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
So I made a mistake because you gave a list of movies that were like, hey, you know, I don't know if anybody's seen this. I would like to talk about these. I'd be down to talk about these. And I went through the list and I was like, oh, Sing Sing, no way. No way it's going to be around here. So I picked Kinds of Kindness out of the list because I was like, sweet. You know, that's a mainstream. The dude just won. I mean, he was just in the Oscars. Like, mm-hmm. Poor Things was, you know, everyone went apeshit for Poor Things. So it's got to be wide release, like wide release. Not necessarily true.
Oh, no.
I searched, could not find it in the two theaters that are here. Then even though there's some like Dandelion movie, which I've never even heard of, which they're showing that, though. I don't understand. But so then I did a search. I widened. For people who don't know, I'm in Grand Junction. So I widened my search. And then I found one movie theater that was showing it once a day at like 6:30.
Okay.
And so I was like, okay, sweet. I found one. Bought the tickets. Couple days. Then it's rolling into Sunday. And I checked to make sure, oh, how long is it going to take? Because it's going to be a drive. Like, I'm going to have to leave the town. And I bought a ticket in Aspen. So I drove an hour and a half to Aspen.
Oh, shit.
And then an hour. I drove longer than this fucking movie was. But God. Oh, my God.
You could have watched this movie twice.
I could have. If they let me take it home, I could have watched it on the way home.
Wow.
It was. Yeah. I don't know. I was so annoyed. Dude, it was so far. But
That's ridiculous.
I will say I'm really.
Hey, you got to go to Aspen, though.
Yes, I did go to Aspen. So, and, you know, hey, it was late, so no. I didn't have to pay for parking, gangster. But
nice.
Honest to God, this was actually a pretty damn cool theater I went to. It was like, it was called BTM Theater in Aspen. It is, God, I was a little late because I couldn't find it because the entrance just looks like it's like a mom pop clothing store or like, you know, you're walking down the street of a small town and no, there's a bookstore, there's a candy store. And it just looks like another of those because it looked like they have about five or six theaters and mm-hmm. my theater was in the basement. So I had to go down a spiral staircase into the basement where there's three screens down there.
Yeah.
It was really cool. I mean, it looked like a mom and pop shop that like the owner was stuck his head out when I walked in and was like, oh, hey. And then came over. Somebody came out the back to be like, do you want any concessions? I was like, no, I'm okay. And then she left. And he was like, yeah, your screen's downstairs. I'm like, downstairs? And I had to go way downstairs to this movie theater. It was a tiny movie theater, but it was still good. Like, I thought the sound was good. The quality was good. Comfy chairs. So it was definitely, it was definitely a win. I did like this movie theater that I will never go to again in my life.
Yeah, I'll be shocked. I'm looking at some of these pictures, and yeah, it is very tiny, very intimate setting in there.
Yes, it is very tiny.
That's really cool though. That's quite the story, quite the trip. was
it was worth it. It was worth it.
I was gonna say, was it worth it
for the movie?
Was the movie worth it?
Ironically, I think what's going to happen is I'm going to repeat a shit ton of stuff that I just said about the bike riders because my big issue was I couldn't sink into it, you know?
Okay.
And then it was like, I really wanted to sink into this movie and like having three different kind of fucked that up, you know, middle of the road to me. Acting was great. Honest to God, it's hard for me to, because it's like, this didn't feel like a full cohesive movie. And it's like, I know I've seen some reviews and reviews and what people think about it. It does seem like it varies. It feels like it's mostly in the middle. Metascore is giving it a 64, which is just like into their generally favorable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
which I think is the perfect description of, like, I'm generally favorable of this movie. I didn't love jumping through. I don't know. I'm not saying it was a bad necessary decision, but it makes it less of a movie to me, and it makes it less of experience doing it. I think he did it well the way he did it, mm-hmm. because my biggest thing was, like, I would sink into, like, the first one, and then it ended, and then I had to start over again. And I'm like, I was, right. I got into that first one by the time we got to the end of it. And I was like, I'm excited to see where this goes, what's happening. And then it ended, and I pulled up my phone. I'm like, what the fuck? I was like, there's no way that was the full movie.
That was so, it.
Yeah, I know, right? I don't know. I'm very middle of the road for it. I wish sure. it was, he picked one of them and flushed it out, mm-hmm. personally, but he did some interesting shit.
So originally, Yorgos Lanthimos and his writing partner from his early days, Efthymis, I'm sure I'm butchering that, so I apologize. I heard him pronounce it once. Efthymis Philippou.
Mispronouncing.
I know, right? For real. He and that screenwriter teamed up for the first time since The Killing of a Sacred Deer, and they fleshed this idea about, but originally they had 10 stories that they wanted to do, and they pared that down to 3.
10 stories?
Yeah, they had 10 shorts that they were doing. I know, right? But what I found interesting is that Lanthimos says that they don't work, like, in an analytical way. So they don't approach a story, or they don't approach a project knowing what the theme is to start with. And even the 3 that they did select.
It's always sex. I can tell you, it's always sex. That's it's what always their theme a sex is thing. All the time.
It's always some that or body mutilation. But so he says that even the stories that they did select for Kinds of Kindness, that they kind of felt like they was in the same world, but they hadn't really fully developed them when they decided to go with these 3. And I think, honestly, that was their big downfall is, yes, I think they were able to kind of pull stuff out and kind of refresh and redevelop these stories to fit somewhat together thematically into, you know, it's about love, and it's about what would you do for love and how far would you go for it. And when you kind of analyze it like that, which I'll get into in a minute, it definitely shifts the perspective and makes it look a little bit grander than it is. But I think that their problem was they went into it just going, yeah, we like these, you know, assortment of stories that really aren't cohesive in any way. So we're going to pick these random stories and then pull from it, you know, some things that are loosely connected. I think it would have been better served to really rehaul it and pick a good theme, a good strong theme, and then restructure each one of these stories if you're going to do it that way, to restructure these stories to really fit that narrative and to really, you know, look at kindness or really look at love or really look at sex in a different light and use this unique storytelling device that they're going with in a much more, a better approach than what they ended up with. Because like you said, it's not my favorite. I don't hate this movie by any means. But it definitely is a step down from Poor Things, a couple steps down from Poor Things, in my opinion.
I wouldn't say that many steps. No, I'm joking. yeah, I don't know about the cohesive, like the connection between the 3. I feel like, and then the people who are like, oh, it's such a great, you know, it's all connected, all this stuff. It feels to me much more like if I were to show you these 3 separately and unprompted, no one is going to say those are connected. Now, if I went, hey, also these are connected. Okay. Yeah. I can see, you know, about, you know, love, like they all kind of like look, you know, it's about love and what you're willing to do, kind of all that stuff. Like I totally get that. And I wouldn't disagree with those, but it feels less of like of a massive connection when it was made and you can tell. Then, hey, you need to find a connection and go, this is the connection. Okay, cool. That checks out. So it doesn't feel that like strongly cohesive, which, and honestly, you know, it's not the worst thing. Like each one individually, I don't know if we want to talk about it in that direction, because also like I could tell the editing style was different too. Mm-hmm. The 3rd one had a really long fade into a couple different like transition shots of her walking around the neighborhood. And honestly, I kind of really loved it. And I was like, this is absolutely the first time they've done this. But it felt like different editing, you know, throughout the styles too, which, you know, it's impressive to do. the acting is good and stuff. It just like, it takes a knock off to me when I feel like I watched, you know, part of the Oscars shorts, you know, it was like, oh, we're showing all the Oscar shorts.
Sure.
It's like, you know, two, three of them just happened to be Yorgos, you know, that's what it felt like, you know, kind of. Oh, right. They all happen to have the same people too.
Right. Well, and it's also interesting because Yorgos and Emily Stone, as we have to all now start referring to her, they actually did a short as well, like in the process of finishing Poor Things and then starting Kinds of Kindness. There's also a short film that they made. So really, they made four short films and decided, hey, we're going to mash these three together and put them out together and leave this fourth one off. You know, we'll cut this and let this survive on its own. But I kind of am interested to see the world where they were all released, kind of like what Wes Anderson did last year and released a bunch of short films, you know, put them on Netflix or whatever as, you know, their own anthology, because this really did feel like I got done. And one of the first things I said was or wrote down was that it was a strange, absurd anthology that felt very H.P. Lovecraft or Ray Bradbury or Twilight Zone or even Black Mirror-esque short films. And so to live in that world where it kind of leans into that and it's released on a streamer and you can kind of, you know, enjoy them as you will. If you want to see all three of them, if you want to just see one of them, go that route, because then it feels even closer to the theme that they were doing instead of saying, hey, this is one cohesive movie, because it really isn't a cohesive movie. There's loose themes that are tied in between each other. And they're all fun. Like I don't want to knock it as in terms of, hey, I hate this. Don't ever do this. This is stupid. It just didn't hit for me because I think it was so loosely tied together.
I agree that he definitely absolutely could have released it on a streaming of like three different, you know, individual, and even he could have done his 10 too. Like,
sure.
If someone explained it, but Brandon, he wouldn't be a real filmmaker then. And, you know, you guys wouldn't call him is he a real filmmaker?
Right. He'd be a short filmmaker, which is exactly definitely, right.
And we don't know how tall he is.
You know, subservient to a real filmmaker.
Hey, what is in, did you sat and looked at the credits? Cause you love to do that, right?
I did
the movie.
I did. I tried to at least, I definitely sat through the credits.
Or does it say Emily or does it say Emma in the credits of the movie?
IMDb has Emma. I believe it's credited as Emma.
Until that changes, I'm calling her Emma. If she wants to be called Emily, either she has to kill the other Emily Stone and completely officially change her name, or they need to get rid of the rule in Hollywood. Okay. Okay. She can't just be like, I've decided everyone has to call me by a different name.
She's Emily Stone the second.
Well, that's dumb. So kill the other one.
Hey, Yorgos, calm down. Calm down.
So I'm trying to. Do you want to talk about these individually? The three of them, because they do feel so like because all of them, they were cool universes. That's why I kind of wanted them fleshed out. Like I would have been into it if we had just like gotten a little bit more information. And because like in the first one, one of the reasons why I personally think you didn't like it as much was probably because they didn't give information, period. Like, they gave some information about, like, the story that you're actively watching, but then they didn't tell you any backstory, period. Like, what was, in the first one, why the fuck was Willem Dafoe, you know, running people's lives and doing all this stuff? You know, where did this start? Why did this start? You know, he looks like he has an office, you know, stuff like that. Has he always been doing this? Because it's the first time he asked him to kill somebody. Because it does definitely the first time. So then the way it ended, it felt like the whole thing was just meant for that. But I'm like, there's a whole other universe that you're just inside of, right? What we watched felt like it was all lead up to just try and kill this guy. And then that's what it felt like their world was also. So it didn't seem complete to me. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yes. Yes. I think you're right. I think, you know, my initial was like, no, that can't be my only thing I gripe about. It really can't be. But the more I think about it, I think you're right. If I got a little bit more, if I got a little bit more about who Willem Dafoe's character was in The Death of RMF, like, you know, oh my God, you know, because, Jesse Plemons' character, Robert, if he, you know, he goes to another company and he tries to get a job with another company, is that company also going to dictate his life? Is he trying to get someone else's approval?
Is that just like society? That's how it works.
Or is that how society works? Is this some kind of, you know, like, you know, is he trying to replace like a father figure in his life? Is he, you know, what exactly is going on? So if I had a little bit more of that, I think I'd be a lot more interested because I think the acting was interesting. I thought the story, you know, like you said, definitely caught me of going, all right, let's figure this out. I don't need it, you know, to be as plainly laid out in the beginning because, you know, sometimes it's fun to be just dropped in the middle and go, okay, who are these people to each other? But then that's just kind of, it was it. It was like we got dropped in into this tiny short thing and then yanked out before we could really engage ourselves with why we're following these characters and what is different about this universe and what exactly we're examining. And also, you know, who RMF is, I thought was an interesting gag that, again, I feel like could have been more tied together through all of them. So the first one is called The Death of RMF. The second story is called RDF or RMF, RDF. Maybe that's different. RDF is flying. And then it has to have been a typo. RMF is flying. And the third one is called RMF Eats a Sandwich. So yeah, to see that character even, you know, fleshed out a little bit more, you know, that character of RMF is kind of on the outlines and not really, you know, part of the story at all, but just kind of comes in at pinpoints during the three stories. To know who he was and what significance he had would have been, I think, more interesting to flesh out as well.
Yes, a little bit more fleshing out in general. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he was paying the dude. He paid the guy. Then he left, and then he wanted him to get killed on his way to wherever in that. And, you know, I like the way that they weaved in. This is the hardest part for me. It's like each individual one, like, I, you know, he's kind of a weirdo, so there's some weird shit here and there. But, like, and I also don't need to see, like, I'm out on the rape and all that stuff. And, you know, it feels like it's overtly sexual for just the sake of being sexual. But I also thought about that about Poor Things, and I was told that I was a fool. So, I, you know, who knows who's correct now, but it, even to like, they weaved in the first one, Emma Stone was like a small part. And then by the time we got to the third one, we had switched main characters. Like the first one was all Jesse and a little Emma. Then it was about half and half. Yeah. Then it was almost all Emma with Jesse there also, which I thought, again, very impressive. All of these are fucking impressive. And all of the stories I thought were interested. Just pick one of them. I don't know. It just makes it less of a movie to me for whatever reason. It just doesn't feel like a cohesive. Yeah. And that in the first one, it was very funny how they weaved Emma Stone in. And then she, you know, she had the racket and stuff. And him stealing the racket was very funny. I don't know.
Yeah, I like the humor that was infused throughout. Like, I laughed out loud multiple times of just, like, kind of how absurd these things are or the timing of, you know, lines that were delivered. Like, I thought it was very raw and it was very absurdist, but, like, that's kind of my style of humor is, like, let's see how far we can go. How far can we push it?
Can I tell you the weirdest, like, actually, like, I don't know if it was the biggest laugh, but definitely got me to laugh and I wasn't expecting. In the first one, when Willem Dafoe, he's like, it's like a far back shot and he's blocked by the couch, I want to say, but he walks into frame. He like takes a big step forward and he's wearing shorts. And I don't know why that really made me laugh. In the first one, he's like this businessman. He's very professional. It like stepped forward and he's got the weirdest shorts on. And I was like, I don't understand what's going on. That's roughly what I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, who are these people? What the hell? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a good gag. I liked that one a lot. Especially, I also liked when his character in that first one was like making Jesse's character, making Robert just do the entrance over and over and over. Like, how far is he going to push him? Like, how many times can he get him to you know, dance, basically, you know?
He was getting frustrated and stuff, still did it and everything. It was funny. I mean, small stuff, like the world that we watched was kind of deep, but it wasn't deep beyond the point where we were. Cause I mean, like I thought it was fantastic him going to the bar and being like, you can clearly tell he's never made a decision. Cause he's like, what do you want to drink? He goes, I don't know. He's like, there's wines in the back or whatever. And he goes, What do you think? What do you think? And then he suggests something and he just immediately went with it. So he didn't make the decision. He just had somebody else make the decision for him. You know, all the shit was clever. Like, it's good. It's well-made and shit. It's just, give me a movie instead of some shorts.
Sure. It's too short for it to be satisfying. We got too small of a bite.
That's what your girlfriend said.
Hey!
Too short to be satisfying. Hey-o.
Oh, I got it. It was a sex thing. I get it.
I know. I just want to say that it
was,
again.
Okay.
Because I actually was very kind of proud of that.
But yeah, so I want to talk individually about the actual plots about these. Less so about the death of RMF, because we kind of touched on that. Like, so what do you think? Is that world, is that what that is? Is each corporation that you work for, like, do they dictate your life, or is it like these special individual, like, people pick out, I don't know, that's their job is, hey, I'm just going to be your puppet master. I'm going to tell you exactly what to do, because that's how I want the world to operate. Or, like, is it private companies? What do you think? Is that a world that you would want to live in?
I think, honestly, my guess is that it's his commentary on, you know, people who get not traditional 9-to-5 corporate jobs and they just, like, run their lives essentially through the work. So it was a cult, like, you know, but cult, when you think of cults, you think of the third one, you know, they live in a weird ass, they do weird stuff, blah, blah, blah. And they still control their world. But in reality, you know, if you work a job, it's kind of a cult. You know, we worked at the same restaurant and there's people who, you know, I love this company. I'll do whatever I want for this company, because it, like, turns into, like, a damn near cult sometimes. So in my mind, it's not necessarily, it's a cult, but just a business side of a cult. You know, it's the same thing as the third one, just they put a business suit on it instead of the traditional, more traditional one. That's how I kind of viewed it. I do believe it's, like, it's more culty than everybody does it. It's not like a thing that all corporations, because, again, I didn't even see him do anything, any of them do anything. So I think it's more like, you know, he gets seeked out. I wonder if Willem goes and finds people, because, God, he can't be controlling that many people's lives at the same time, right? Is this just a one-on-one thing? Or is there but then it would be less weird for him to stumble upon Emma Stone also being part of it, right? If everybody does it, or if there's a bunch of them, I feel like you stumble upon somebody controlling or getting that note and you're like, okay, it could be somebody else. It could be blah, 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 you know?
Yeah, no, I think that it's a lot more people. Like, I would say probably 20 to 30 people is probably who he's controlling. Just, you know, like deciding their entire life and playing it out for them. Plus, I think it's also almost a commentary on filmmaking as well, about, hey, this director is going to tell you every single thing about who you are, and you're going to do it. And how far are you going to go?
Yeah. Okay. See, if there's a bunch of people that he's controlling, to me, when he goes into her house and, like, sees the note, I don't think that's that crazy then. I think he had a bigger reaction than it would be, because it's like, yeah, there's a bunch of people that are part of this program. It's not shocking that, you know, I guess you bumped into one. Yeah, I don't know.
Right. I mean, especially because I thought that he saw Emma Stone's character outside with Willem Dafoe, like, to begin with. Like, that was where he first saw her. So why would he think anything but he's with her, or
did he see her? I thought he bumped into her after that.
Yeah, I thought that
got
it was
to see
it,
that, but I could
thought
be
he was following. I don't know. Yeah, maybe I was remembering that part incorrectly.
To me, it felt like the hospital, when he went to go see the hospital, it was very much like, I mean, hey, maybe he had that plan to start with. That's a lot of, like, that's a lot of planning for this dude that doesn't make decisions for himself. Granted, that happened later, too, when he broke into the hospital. That was a whole lot of planning for a dude who doesn't plan, which kind of contradicts the universe that he should have hypothetically can even order a drink, but he can, like, plan a murder and stuff on his own. Interesting. Tick down. Thank you, Brandon, for pointing that out.
You got
no,
it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think of them being a bunch. I think of it as just a weird ass universe. But
That's fair. That's
That first ending really threw me off when the credits popped up, and I was like,
yeah,
the fuck is going on? Bullshit. That was the movie. Bullshit.
I know, because when the first title came up, when the death of RMF, I definitely thought that was just a chapter marker. And I went, oh, here we go. This is going to be something we're talking about is chapter markers. But no, they were self-contained stories.
Yeah, it was very shocking.
For sure.
Hey, the first one before we rolled in the second one, I got really into it. And when he went through the hospital, broke him out, and he laid him in the street, I was like, oh my God, this dude is gonna kill this guy. Because I wasn't sure. I didn't know if he was trying to like maybe save him or maybe take him to the Willem Dafoe. I wasn't positive until he laid him in the street, flipped him over, and I was like, yes, I'm excited. And then he went like multiple times around the circle too.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to make sure.
It was funny.
Just to make sure. Yeah, that was great. Yeah. And then the song that she plays, that Vivian plays, is the Bee Gees' How Deep Is Your Love? So again, just kind of accentuating that whole, you know, there's your theme is, you know, again, how far would you go? Whether or not love is, you know, is given, if it's conditional, if, you know, you have to, if it's manufactured, these people that we're watching are really desperate for that kind of connection and that kind of attraction. So that also isn't, it was interesting to kind of think about afterwards.
The same shitty musician that scored Poor Things showed up for Kinds of Kindness also, shitty on a piano, just sitting there pounding random keys.
Bold statement.
God.
He did.
It got a little annoying. I was like, God damn it, dude. And especially because some of these things, honestly, if Poor Things didn't happen so recently, because like some of the sexual stuff, I'm like, God, dude, I just watched this. And then it's like the music. I'm like, dude, you can't just do like the same thing twice. I feel like, now it represents something different.
Now it's, well, it is something different because
it's just the same slow, shitty music. I'm like, God,
I did find it interesting. So I was reading about what the composer was talking about or an interview with the composer. I don't know what I was going to say. But he was saying that this came about near the final mixes for Poor Things. So, yeah, I mean, this all came about while Poor Things was in post-production. Mm-hmm. So, like, this started before Poor Things had actually finished. So very, very interesting overlap there.
That checks out. Three different stories. I'm sure they shot one of them at one point. Then they came back and shot another one. And then they probably shot another one.
Yeah.
I bet you. I mean, I would love to know if it was just like, oh, hey, we're just going to go, like, 2 week increments or like 3 week increments.
No, that's
whenever everybody has time, we're just gonna do that.
No, that's exactly what it was. Is it was about 2 weeks per segment. So it was a very kind of run and gun, very nailed fast it. Production.
I could be a producer. No big deal. How easy was that? I nailed it.
Yeah, you did. So Jerskin Fendrix, the composer, he talked about how he got invited to the New Orleans for just to kind of visit the set. Plus he was also the pianist in the first one where there was the piano player in the hotel room. That was the composer actually playing.
Okay, good, good, good. I'm glad they did that.
Yes. The suggestion came from Lanthimos was very vague, just kind of, maybe a piano and a choir. And so he kind of just went and kind of, again, created this whole thing from nothing with very little help is all I was saying. So again, your gripe about the score and the composing kind of again comes from, I think, the lack of direction, honestly, the lack of blueprint from the director and just going, you know, hey, run free with it and just come back with whatever you feel like is good, is whatever you feel like fits. And so I feel like that also kind of gets a little bit of a knock, at least in your opinion, mm-hmm. or why it gets a knock.
Yep.
So the second story that I want to talk about most is RMF is flying. And when I saw that title, I went, oh, okay, cool. We're following RMF. Like that's who our like main source of cohesion in these stories is going to be. And it's not, which, you know, is whatever. But then when I did see him, I went, oh, there he is. Okay, cool. So now we've checked that box. And that's why, you know, this human being is in this story. But yeah, so the second one is where our main character, Daniel, is his wife has gone missing after some kind of shipwreck. And he's kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, he's adrift himself. And, you know, isn't the same person. Ha ha.
Nice.
Isn't the same person and can't. Thank you. Thank you. And can't kind of seem to get his life together and can't pull his, you know, himself out of this deep depression. Then all of a sudden his wife appears and all of a sudden, you know, she gets found and gets thrust back into his life. And instead of being happy, he starts becoming skeptical about whether or not this is the real Liz or if this is some kind of fake, you know, doppelganger.
Well, he was right.
I mean, spoiler, right?
He was right. This one was, I mean, again, I can see this of like the things you'll do for love. Like that, sure. That's what it kind of felt like to me. It was weird. Speaking of sexual things, them watching the porn was super weird.
Yeah, it was. Also pretty just fucking like, hilarious, though.
It's just like, what does this movie want to be? You just went for a cheap bit, I feel like. That just felt out of place. I'm like, why are we doing, like, what, because they're close? Like, that's what that was supposed to signify, that these people were close? There's other ways to do that.
Yes, there are.
Horny.
Yes, there are.
He's just horny. the weirdest thing about this one to me is that I watched the first one, and I was like, I don't know if I've ever seen Willem Dafoe in, like, a suit like that. This is creepy. He's kind of like a, kind of a badass corporate. I think I'm more like scared of him or creeped out by him than when I normally see him. And then I saw him in this one in normal like jeans and stuff. And I was like, I'm so creeped. This is creepy as hell. I don't know what Willem Dafoe normally wears day to day, but
right.
The way he looked in two, which, hey, totally could be how he just normally looked. Looks creepy as hell to me. Looks
because
weird.
I agree. I don't picture him in that kind of clothing.
I don't either. I don't know what clothing I picture him in, though. I don't know what I picture him in, though, but it's definitely not that. That was the weirdest. He popped up in like a dad. I was like, I fucking hate this. I'm creeped out. Is he going to be a serial killer? What is happening?
Who did he kill and whose skin is he wearing? This is fucking terrifying.
100%.
But so, yeah, so I want to get your thoughts. I want to talk about this one because this one was the most... Ray Bradbury, or the most Twilight Zone-esque of the three, because it totally presents the whole ambiguity aspect of it. I think we've talked about some movies that do ambiguity, you know, to varying degrees. So with two and only with two, what do you think? Was this clear in what whether Daniel was crazy or whether or not this was a lot more ambiguous, whether Liz was really herself?
It was not clear in any way, shape, or form. Because when he wasn't there, she was talking about she went to a place where dogs ruled us. And it's not even like it. That's not like he wasn't there to hear it. So we could be like, oh, you know, because I'm assuming you're kind of implying at the end where she dies. And then the old, quote unquote, the other Emma, the other wife or whatever walks in. Mm-hmm. And they're like that. That could be in his head. 100%. I agree with that. But like other things happened when he wasn't there for, because it wasn't like we followed him around. We followed both of them around. So we are like part of her too. So it's like, you know, her cutting off the thumb, he wasn't anywhere there, you know, her talking about dogs ruling them, nobody was there for. So it was very, again, it's very like, it was interesting watching the dynamic between the two, you know, everyone loves a good porn with Emma Stone in it. They didn't explain, you know, who's crazy. And honestly, this one, probably more than the first one, I was more okay with it because it was just so out there that it was like when she started cutting her thumb off and stuff, I was not expecting any answers. When she cut her thumb off and everyone acted like nothing happened, I was like, I can't imagine we're going to get answers from this. So I kind of just emotionally moved on. then trying to figure out who's crazy, who's not crazy.
Yeah. But I think even then it was a fun adventure, like that descent into chaos and that descent into the psyche of, you know, again, how far would you go and whether or not, you know, he's crazy or she's, you know, real or not. Like that was just a fun unraveling to watch because he did. I mean, Plemons' character, Daniel, he really fucking came unglued when Liz came back or when doppelganger Liz came back. And I would have loved to see that stretched out a little bit more. Like you said, is a little bit more time in each of these stories would have been nice. But I also did like that throw about, like, at the very end, then they just embrace and kiss and, like, oh my God, like, everything's fine and dandy. And to me, I don't know. I don't think I think that is the fake Liz. I think the fake Liz shows up after the real Liz kills herself.
You think the real Liz cut off a thumb was perfectly fine? The real human being did that?
I want to say yes so badly.
Well, it's not. There's no way the real Liz in this world, there's no way the real human being cut off a thumb,
right,
and cooked it and right, gave it to her husband,
right,
and then just moved on with life. There's no way that happened.
Just continued as if nothing happened.
The real her. Something else is going on, definitely.
Yeah. That she's programmed to love him unconditionally and do whatever it is he asks, you know, period. I don't know. I also like, that's the direction you go with to try and test her love and her devotion and whether or not she's a real human being is, okay, if you really love me, you know, cut out your liver and feed it to me.
Yeah,
instead of, I don't know, trying to devote yourself some other way. Like, it's just an interesting way to go about that.
So let me ask you this. If he had titled this instead of Kinds of Kindness,
uh-huh,
it was like, I don't know, if he wants to keep the alliteration, Levels of Love. Fuck it. We'll call it that.
Ooh, nice. Nice.
Thank you. Thank you. Do you think you'd like it more? Because it less than, oh, it's different, like, types of kinds of kindness. It feels like, uh-huh, it's different, like, types of love to me rather than kindness. Like, it feels so weird that he called it kindness. Would it be feel a little bit more connected? Because I feel like that's what it is. It's just different levels of love, it feels like to me, like obedient love. And granted, the first two kind of feel like different versions of the same, like, type of love, obedient, like,
sure,
love to me.
I mean, even the third one, kind of obedient love as well, because, you know, you have the cult leader, you know, saying, hey, go and do this. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
But they were defining him left and right. She was just doing whatever she wanted quite often, frankly. That's why I do agree. I hear you. It's still culty. Like, mm-hmm, it was all the first and third felt like, oh, this is based around a cult. The middle one didn't. Then the first two were like obedient, but the third one wasn't. And then it's, mm-hmm, like they all kind of, I don't know. The,
I don't know, I guess
diagram,
the swingers are kind of a cult, right?
I guess. I don't know. I got to ask my parents. I'll ask my parents. That was a
but
joke.
Yeah, I
they're obviously not swingers. If my mom actually listens to this, she'll flip out. So obviously that was a joke. Go ahead.
Ha ha ha. I think might have been, I don't know, I think that was my second favorite of the three. I think I like the third one more.
Oh really?
Felt I like think
you
were, so.
Okay.
I think so. I feel like there's something else I wanted to say. Anyway, moving on. To RMF Eats a Sandwich. This is about, okay, so yeah, this is more about the cult, and more about these followers. This also has a you know, strong sense of Twilight Zone, or even Ray Bradbury, who does, you know, the sci-fi genre and the kind of twisted macabre style.
Mm-hmm.
But this one is about two cult members. I almost said detectives. Two people who are trying to find
cult detectives. I think you're writing a new ABC hit sitcom, Cult Detectives.
I can't wait to finish that one. I'm going to start tonight. Anyway, okay, so so RMF Eats a Sandwich. So yeah, so this one's about two people who are going around trying to find this supernatural being, for lack of a better term, because we don't find out that they're looking for someone who can raise someone from the dead. We don't really, I mean, we get it right away, but I don't think we understand exactly what they're doing or what they're looking for until we find her.
Just because you're stupid doesn't mean they get a knock. Damn, homie.
Yeah, this is a three for me because obviously it's
dumb. Deal. I'm putting it in.
Ah, shit.
No, yeah, they definitely like give you a pretty big, honestly, this one of the three, I feel like was the least like missing information necessarily. Cause like we kind of know cults, you know, that's the cult that we are more, it's established and we kind of used to. So you put them in that place, you do some weird stuff. Wilm's banging everybody. We're like, yeah, that checks out. We know this could be real.
Yeah.
I don't need
plus
to
plus again,
this
it's always
anymore.
A sex thing.
Dude, it is always a sex thing. Measuring from nipple to belly button to nipple to nipple.
Perfect.
Yeah, it gave me the least amount of, like, what we should have. It gave us, like, kind of, oh, special powers and stuff like that. But, yeah, we definitely don't get the full weight of everything until towards the end, at least.
Yeah.
In the end. They didn't explain the water until later, too. Quote-unquote water. That's not... I mean, obviously, that's not real. Before I say... let me correct this. Obviously, none of this is real. But, like... how long it would take to cry that much fucking water? Or, wait. Is it a bunch of water that they purified by crying in?
Oh, I think that's it. That's got to be it.
I just thought about that now. That has to be it.
Yeah, because you're right. That's a fuck ton of tears, which also would be very salty and very, very disgusting to drink. Purify it, to kind of bless it with your tears... oh, I like that. I'm going to go with that.
I hope it's that.
It's got to be that. Otherwise, that's a lot of tears. That's a lot of sweat. A lot of ice sweat. Mm-hmm. This one I think was my favorite because, it definitely was the most cohesive most story. And it was the most Emma, for sure. She was absolutely fantastic in this third act that, showed her range and kind of just really explored the idea of, like, I'm letting go of everything that I've been conditioned to care about my entire life, and I still have this connection to these people. I still can't let them go, even though I believe in something completely different, and I've been told I have to let go of everything, that my previous life kind of gave me. So that was interesting to watch. Of course, the whole date rape thing was just terrible and awful to actually experience and watch.
Very true.
And I feel like we brushed past that a little bit too quickly and a little bit too easily. I think that needs to be accentuated that is wrong and terrible.
To jump way back to bike riders, one of the weirdest lines I thought personally was like when in bike riders, when she almost got raped and then she was like, I don't know what I would have done. I would have killed myself. Who would want you after that? And it was just like they blew through that. And I was like, that was just a fucked up line that we just casually threw out there and then like moved on.
Yeah.
Like it was weird. But I agree with you. This one also, they kind of just it felt like the point of that kind of was to show like because we were kind of watching and going, why would she necessarily leave? Why isn't she with this family? Everyone looks like they're so happy. This guy's nice. That guy's nice. And then it's like then we got to get a peek into why he's a piece of shit, like why she wants to get away from him. Why she was looking for an escape, and then you can kind of see her maybe like looking for an escape and falling into these people.
Yeah.
Which is very much about, love and positive body. Well, granted, also, did she look excited to have sex with him the first time they came back and they were like trying to figure out who's going to have sex with who?
No, but nobody, throughout the entire movie, all three stories, like no one felt particularly excited about anything. Like there was very flat. In that term, emotionally in that way. But yeah, she definitely wasn't like excited about sleeping with this dude.
I don't know. I'm just trying to find like the parallels, which, hey, one of the good things about this movie is it's definitely got rewatchability to like figure out
for sure.
More than like weird things happened. I want to watch it again. It's like more of like, this kind of might explain that. Or like, if this is true, then that's true.
Right. Right. And do these universes play with the same rules as each other, or are they completely different universes that we have to fundamentally figure out and dissect, side by side? Or
the rules within each one also keeping up? Because you mentioned the first one. Now that I think about it, I disagree with his being able to plan a full ass murder, getting a patient out of a hospital, all this stuff, when he couldn't even like order a drink by himself before. And then it's like, so now that we talk about it, it's like, I don't think that logic of that world kind of felt carried through, even though it was cool. It was a cool scene.
Right.
And I liked he did that and stuff, but it would be interesting.
Speaking of killing in this third one. So they're going around trying to find this reanimator and randomly this twin comes up, is like, hey, so my sister is who you're looking for. They dismiss her. Then she gets banned from the cult because she got raped. Again, not necessarily her fault, not her fault at all. Uh, but in the Colts' eyes, it is, right? In the Colts' eyes, it's like, hey, you allowed him, you let this happen, so we have to try and, you know, purify you, and if it doesn't happen, oh well. So she gets shunned out of the cult, which provides a hilarious moment,
which
with her
I
jumping
also
up and down.
Yes, it was a funny moment. I like they did it on the wide also.
Yeah.
Which I assume like her being, you know, having to be purified after being raped and stuff would be, you know, social commentary on like how the society kind of treats rape victims, and it's much more like their fault than the rapist's fault.
Yes.
For whatever, it's much labeled in that way of like, you know, you should have done more. It's all your fault, blah, blah, blah. So I assume that that was a little bit of parallel too, which is good social commentary, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't scream it, but I think, yeah, it absolutely is infused with that, less than subtlety. And I agree. I love that aspect of it as well.
But yeah, her hopping was funny. Oh, I thought of an idea. If I sweat out more, then, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great. And again, it's just also like super, super sad when you think about it, because people are that desperate, like I said, to find some
kindness.
Kind of acceptance.
Don't say love. You gotta say kindness.
Yes.
Desperately out there looking for kindness.
Desperately looking for kinds of kindness.
What's up, girl? You want to make some kindness?
So then disheveled, she goes to a bar and doesn't know what to do with her life. So the twin shows up. It's like, hey, I'm going to tell you this story because you clearly don't believe me. This is what happened. And it turns out that the twin's sister does know how to reanimate people. And that was an interesting, you know, story for sure. And so she goes
I don't think she needed to kill herself. I think based off of the prophecy, she died. She is dead. And then she brought her back. But like, I don't know.
Right.
Like, I do not think she needed to kill herself at the end.
I agree. I thought that was the direction they were going in, is like, hey, I know what your prophecy says. Which also I would have liked to know, like, okay, how does this random person know about this? You know, clearly this cult is big enough.
I know. That felt weird too. Yeah. I know, right? That felt
really
weird
convenient.
Also.
A little
bit
convenient.
Like, why? And she's also like pumped for this person to be discovered by the cult, which sounds awful. Personally, I don't want to just live on the boat. Like everyone's like, oh, you don't have to work. You just they serve you hand and foot. I'm like, that sounds awful. I want to be like live my life.
Yeah, it looked like a nice boat. I wouldn't want to live there for the rest of my life. No way.
Without the
cult,
I might be able to live on there without the cult. But all the cult members and shit, people showing up, I'm out. I'm out.
I also thought that boat was for Emma Stone's daughter. I definitely thought that was for her character's daughter to live on. That's what for some reason I went, oh my God, who are we talking about? I just went there, I guess, because we had just come from seeing her with her daughter and her like, you know, try to kind of be in this kid's life without being in this kid's life. And I was like, oh shit, like, is that how we're going to weasel her way in? Is she's got to live like away from society and away from everybody else?
When did you figure it out? When did you figure it out? When Emma was like, only 2 hours to the boat.
Yes, that was pretty much. I'm like, oh, yep. Took me way too long to get to connect those dots.
She was way too excited for a 2 hour trip still. that chick's going to wake up. Like, Margaret Qualley.
Great actor. But yeah, so then Emma Stone, she goes off on this adventure to find a way to talk to the twin and find out if the twin is actually a reanimator or not, which I feel like,
just
I mean, I'm glad. I'm glad she didn't kill the dog. I thought that was what was going to happen. But also, I feel like it might not have, you know, be as effective if the dog wasn't dead, right? Because that was the whole point, is I'm trying to find someone with powers to reanimate the dead.
Not
just heal somebody.
As infected. Oh, you're just saying in general?
Yes. Because, like, I'm assuming that there are people who know how to heal other people or heal, you know, wounds and stuff.
They're called doctors. I agree.
And not just...
You're talking about in the universe, you think there are multiple people with those powers, just different degrees?
Yes, exactly. Just different degrees of healing or different degrees of superpowers. And there's only one, or there's a very breed of reanimators.
What are these other special powers that people have?
Lasers
out of their eyes.
Levitation, you know, some sort of telekinesis.
claws come out of their fists made of...
Oh, that would be just...
Antium.
Absurd.
One has a streak in her hair. yeah, I don't know which... Of the three, I don't know which I would say is my favorite. Well, I absolutely loved the car. This is what I was thinking the whole time. Can I get a female drive with Emma Stone?
Right?
That would be dope as hell. Driving around. Obviously, was she driving? Did you find that at all?
I did find it. So they have what was the rig? It was called, let me see if I can find it real quick. A biscuit rig. They used a biscuit rig for the scenes where Emma Stone's character drives, and the device is attached to the top of the car, which allowed someone else to drive while they shot Emma actually, you know, holding the steering wheel and, you know, driving and all that fun stuff.
Okay.
But
let me rephrase this. I can't imagine she's the one that peeled in and drifted into spots and stuff. That's what
I would agree.
Okay. I would agree. That wasn't her.
The car was amazing, but then that also provided me, I think with my favorite ending. So she finds the animator, she drugs her, she kidnaps her, she takes her to the corpse, which is RMF.
Lady Drive.
Throw that in.
I'm thinking about the movie. Lady Drive.
Ooh, I like that.
It's sexist, but whatever. It sounds cool.
Just spitball it. Workshop it. It's good. I like where it's at.
We're going to combine this one and the last one.
So she does get the healer or the reanimator to actually revive someone from the dead, which was, again, interesting and like, oh, my God, and he just walks out. Just, all right, cool. We're not going to talk about that. We're not going to, harp on the fact that, hey, there's now another living person and all of, this universe, what the hell is actually happening? We get a great dance sequence, which was improvised on the set of Poor Things in between setups. That's where they kind of workshop that.
I mean, hey, I thought it was a good dance. I definitely probably could not have done better, but I agree with you. It definitely was. It checks out that it was improvised. She just wiggled around.
Yep, she wiggled around. It looked like it was a lot of fun. I'll say that. So that was a good dance, and then. She's driving the healer or driving the reanimator, right?
That was
trying to get back in the credit, cult.
The credits happened during the dancing, right? This is the first one that they.
I don't think so.
Because I wrote down this is the first one that's extended past the credits.
Well, does
fake credits.
Yes, there is a little bit afterwards where RMF does actually eat the sandwich. Which I'll get to in just a sec, but I think that the credits happen after the crash. So she's driving the healer. She wakes up, goes, "Hey, what the fuck's happening?" Freaks out. Emma Stone's character is not paying attention to the road. Swerves off the road, hits a sign. I can't remember what the sign was for. But I know it was a funny enough gag for me to laugh at that. The healer goes flying through the windshield and fucking dies. So again, just the ironic nature of someone who can reanimate corpses dies. I don't know. That's just humorous to me. And that was that was Stone's character's chance to get back into the cult. So it's like, oh my God, you actually did it. You pulled it off, and hubris got the best of you. And I love that ending so much. And then so then we get the credits. We get into it, and then we cut back to. The end of the third story, which is where RMF, the dude who got reanimated, is out just at a sandwich stand, just eating a sandwich, just real calm and collected, and like nothing happened.
Is this a post credit scene?
Yes.
After the real credits roll,
it's like after the fake credits, and I think it's after some of the real credits roll, or before all of the real credits roll.
Yeah, because I think the fake credit that ended like the other shorts happened when she was dancing, I thought. Talking about.
Okay.
It definitely extended past those fake credits because I wrote down this is the only one past the fake. Well, I don't think it was like in the car because the car was like the whole last scene, it felt like.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was there. I did not stay past like the regular credits. So I did not see RMF. Mm-hmm. Eating a sandwich. I did not see that.
So that's where that was, and it wasn't like at the very, very end of all of the credits. It was like post fake credits, pre real credits. It was kind of right in there. I don't remember if it was exactly like pre all credits or if it had done some stuff.
That's fine.
All right, moving on.
Doesn't matter.
but yeah, that one was great. That was funny. I enjoyed that one, that ending of the three probably the most.
All right. Do you want to, on the way out, because we got to wrap this mofo up.
Wrap it up.
On the way to some grades, who was your favorite? Who do you think was the best and worst acting of like the main Margaret Qualley,
So there's Emma Stone, obviously, Jesse Plemons, Willem Dafoe. Ooh,
Emily
Margaret
Stone.
Margaret Qualley.
I'm going to be friends with her.
And then Hong Chau was also in everything.
That's the chick from Whale.
Yes, correct. Correct. And then I swear that I, when in doing research for Poor Things, that I stumbled across Emma Stone saying the first assistant director, Yorgos Stanafikos, made everything so easy, you know, to figure out because he mapped out everything so well. I swear to God that that was the same guy who did RMF, right? Yorgos Stephanakos was the first assistant director, but I looked him up on IMDb and he's not. So I wanted to say he was one of my favorites just because he was just such a small part in each one of them that wanted to be connected that wasn't, but I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to go there. So those are the five main actors.
the guy that had, what, a line maybe? No, did he even have a line?
I don't think he had a line, yeah. I don't think he ever spoke.
He was definitely the best actor.
Clear.
Fuck the rest of them.
Emma Stone, Jesse Plemons, Willem Dafoe, Margaret Qualley, and Hong Chau. I don't know. I'm going to go with, I think I like Jesse Plemons the most. I think Emma Stone's a pretty close second, and Margaret Qualley is the runner-up. Because I guess, again, I just expect Willem Dafoe to be amazing in everything, and I don't hate his performances by any means. I guess it's just I've come to expect that range and that much just pure acting talent from him. And he's got such absurd roles.
Yeah, I was going to say, they gave him, you know, the middle one didn't give him a unique character. They gave him a bullshit character that was a throwaway that he was like barely in. So he was realistically, he was major part of the first one, minor part of the third one, barely in the second one.
Mm-hmm.
The third one, he was even like, he was in a handful. Like I think Chow was in just as much as he was in the third one. They're both were solid. He's solid, but again, yeah, he's Willem. I think Emma crushed the last one. And frankly, I think Emma crushed the last one. But yeah, Jesse was pretty great. They could have given him a more of expressive and more, you know, active characters. He got handed very like bland characters, which I think kind of hurts the, you know, how good was the acting. It was like, you know, it was very mundane, which, you know, what are you going to do? It's the character you're given. So
sure.
Yeah. I don't know. Margaret Qualley though. I thought she was, she's really, really grown on me. Not that I didn't like her, you know, she was great. Sure. And obviously Poor Things. She was your favorite actress in Poor Things. Cause she stood in the background. She stood in the background and did like two things. I think
the way she caught that ball. Oh my God.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, as we're wrapping up, the last thing I wanted to just kind of talk about was any awards chances, because this is super, super early still. But this year, like you said last year, like there was just you thought it was a weak year. I think that so far, I mean, through the middle of July, like this is a super weak Oscar year. So I'm really counting on the latter half of this year to pump up with some really good Oscar contenders. I guess I was expecting a little bit more coming out of Lanthimos and Emma Stone, just coming off of Poor Things and how intense that was and how many awards it did garner. Kindness, I don't know. I don't know where I'd put this. Again, super early. I guess I wouldn't be surprised to see it somewhere in the costume design. I wouldn't be surprised to see writing, but those are really the two that might have the best chances. Maybe editing, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd be more on the editing side than anything else. I think the editing was good. And yeah, other than that, I don't know. I mean, production design, honestly, you know what this movie's realistic problem was? It wasn't like off the deep end enough. It needed to go farther off the deep end for then people to be more, you know, enamored with it.
I think you're right.
He went too middle. So he needs to either go poor things or, you know, this is similar thing of like Lobster, dude. It's like, it was like slightly too weird, I think, for the people, but not weird enough for the people who just like weird stuff.
Yeah.
He found like the dead zone in between. And it was just not like, you know, it's got to have more sex scenes and shit and more, you know, she should have had more sex with the car, you know, something like that.
Right.
Instead.
Right.
Instead.
The car needs to start talking. The car itself needs to be the reanimator. Yeah, you're right. Go. I mean, if you're going to be absurd, go fucking
crime.
Absurd.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, I could actually. That'd be super interesting. All right. Sweet.
Lady Drive, obviously.
Lady Drive. Lady Drive or Lady Driver? Because this is a riff off of
the other
Drive, not Baby Driver, right?
Yeah, yeah. This is Drive, not Baby Driver.
Okay, gotcha. So I feel like it honestly, now the more I think about it, I feel like she drove a lot more like Baby Driver than with Drive.
Fuck you, man. This is my idea. What are you doing?
God. Waylon, I'm worming my way in. I always got
to
worm my way in.
You want to rate? You want to grade first, or do you want me to? I would. If it's me, I need to think.
I think I need to think as well. Since we're grading, I'll start my train of thought by just saying like I enjoyed this one. It definitely, like I said in the beginning, it definitely wasn't on the level of Poor Things. And it definitely, you know, I'm not going to rave about it the entire way. There were definitely moments that I really liked, and there were moments that I could have done without, or, you know, just were completely out of place. It was an interesting strategy, an interesting idea to go with three distinctly different short films and mash them all together without a true cohesion a true thematic cohesion between the three of them. And we were able to kind of pick out some stuff that felt similar to one another, but it wasn't by design. It was very much just here are some story, some quirky, you know, weird stories that I want to tell. Make of it what you will. So I kind of like that, but also I didn't love it. Acting wise, I thought it was pretty solid overall. Didn't hate anybody. Cinematography wise, pretty standard camera movements. But it looked good. It was all in focus.
Absolutely. It was all, I think it was all in focus. Did they do any rack focuses? I'm sure all of it wasn't in focus at some point, but I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was good. Costumes I liked throughout, all of it. Those were quirky and interesting. A lot of humor, good writing. Just, you needed more of it. You know, I know you didn't love how we didn't stay in each world long enough. Mm-hmm. So. But overall, I don't think that this is in the eights for me. I think this is somewhere in a seven range, where I enjoyed a lot of it overall, but I just wasn't, you know, caught by anything in particular. I'm not going to bash anything, you know? So I'm looking at like, probably like a 7.25, maybe as high as a 7.5. But I think I'm looking at stuff like Triangle of Sadness, or even Bottoms, or, honestly, even the Marvels, where it was a solid attempt and I enjoyed a lot of aspects of it, but it just wasn't the greatest thing ever. So I think I am going to put this on the same level of Triangle of Sadness, where it did a lot of good things for me, but it just wasn't my cup of tea. So 7.25 out of 10 would be my grade for Kinds of Kindness.
7.25. Okay. Yeah. Hey, it makes sense. I opened Minecraft on my laptop. it does totally make sense. A 7.25, that feels justified. I'm in that range. In that range for me personally is like the 7.2, like The Menu, Talk to Me, The Babadook, The Killer. Like I can understand it being in this range. I think, yeah, I'm so torn with it because it's like each individual one I enjoyed. I was never watching the movie or got the story and was like, this is boring, I want the next one or anything like that. I did want more of like universes. To me, that's less, oh, you wrote so well that I want more of it. To me, it's less of, you did a poor job because you didn't give me enough of this. I definitely, you know, would be down for some of the, Yorgos is just not my vibe all the time. He's a fucking weirdo. Not that I'm not weirdo, but like different weirdos. Yeah, acting was good. It was a good movie. It's hard. It's one of these things to me. It's like, it's, you know, challengers where I'm like, I don't personally love it. You know, I'm not bashing it. There's nothing I can really like poke out. I think some, you know, in the first one, the story didn't necessarily keep up, you know, it's annoying not getting the information. Like it's one thing to put you in the blind, but then explain it as we go. I don't know. Middle of the road. I'm also going to go 7.25. Nice. To me, it's matching. It is matching 3,000 Years of Longing. Sorry to Bother You, The Menu. That all, to me, it's on that level where it's like, it looked good. It was good, but it just could have been way better. And it just didn't like grab me necessarily. You know, I could, if you were like, oh, we're going to watch this again, I could take it or leave it. You know, I'm definitely not like, ooh, I'm so excited to watch this again necessarily. Mm-hmm. So 2 7.25s.
Nice.
7.25.
As far as rewatchability, I think if, you know, when I see it on streaming somewhere, I'll probably eventually turn it back on and go, oh yeah. Let me see if I can reevaluate this or what I can pick away from it. And I might like it a little bit more down the road now when I have some time with it, but I'm not going to be like, all right, when's the Blu-ray coming out? And I'm pre-ordering it the second that it's coming out. That's, you know, where I'm at.
You know, I do think there would be, if I did watch it again, I'm sure we would learn some more. Like I do have, there's a small feeling that maybe this is like, nope, where we watched it, we were like, oh, you know, it's pretty damn good. I kind of liked it. And then like the more we talked about it, the more we sat there, watched it again, it was like, you know what? Actually, this is really layered. And like, this is this, and started to really like it way more like the second time when it really sank in.
Sure.
But I don't know. I saw it 2 days ago. I haven't been thinking about it much, you know? So I don't know necessarily if that is a true statement. I might have just made shit up.
First time we've ever done that, right?
Hey-o.
Hey now.
But I'm bumped.
For reference, I was just looking you. Oh, yeah, we have a Nope very similar. I've got it at a 7.5. You have Nope at a 7.75. That might be a candidate for one of our first rewatches to go back and see what we think about it a year or two later.
Yeah, maybe.
For sure.
Yep, maybe.
Well, with that in mind, yeah, have a great day. Whatever you do, go just make sure you spread some kindness. Whatever kind of kindness you feel would make someone else's day brighter and better, do it. Give them the kindness that you wish you would
do
receive.
It.
Do it. Do it.
Well, the kindness I want is everyone to leave me alone.
Hey, we can make that dystopian future happen. Every time you walk into a room, everyone turns their heads away from you.
If only.
If only, if only. Sweet. Yeah, so... Yeah, let us know what you think of Kinds of Kindness. Which of the three stories was your favorite? Which of the other seven that we didn't get to see? If you know anything about them, let me know, because I definitely want to know.
Fourth one would have been the best.
Fourth one probably would have been the best.
Didn't make would have been the best.
The sixth one to me was the most interesting conceptually, but I'm, you know, I don't know how he would have pulled
pervert,
that off.
So that makes sense. I don't know.
So if anyone knows or if anyone wants to throw out some ideas for where this anthology sequel could go, leave us some notes in the comments. I'm not sure where we're releasing this on our release schedule, but I'm sure we had a great episode last week. I'm sure we're going to have a great episode next week as well. Enjoy all those episodes. Like Matt said, please subscribe, please like, leave us some comment, tell someone about the podcast, tell us what movies you want us to review, what's coming out that you're excited for, anything that we may have missed this year that you'd love us to talk about, because I like watching movies. Matt likes watching movies. You guys enjoy movies. That's kind of the whole point. We're here to talk. So
it's the whole fucking point, guys.
The whole
God.
Fucking shebang. That's it. That's all we got for you. So enjoy all the movies. Enjoy the TV shows. Do whatever you do. Spread some kindness. Lots of love. All the buzzwords, all the keywords, hashtags, greatness. Sing some national anthems for us. All right, guys. We'll talk to you later. Have a good week.
Bye.
Bye.